Welcome, everyone. We are ready to start. My name is April Crenshaw, and I will serve as host for this session. As a reminder, the code of conduct is in effect at all times. I am about to start recording, and the presenter may begin immediately after the recording notification plays. Record, and we will get started.
Now we wait in bated breath for the
recording in progress.
There it is. It's okay. All yours. Take it away.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Stephen Downs. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. Thanks for coming to this session. I see there's 50 of you. It makes me feel relevant. I appreciate that. I got a packed agenda today, so without further ado, I'm going to share the screen. Hopefully my head and shoulders still shows up when I do that. Screen one, share. All right. And you should now be seeing the cover to my slides. Yes, you are. You are seeing the cover to my slides. So this talk's called Just in Time, Creating Dynamic Open Learning Resources Using GAI. Just a caveat off the top, it won't be 100% GAI. So it'll be other types of AI as well. But you get the idea, right? For all of history, open education resources, which I'm now calling open learning resources to kind of shift the field a bit, have been about static learning resources, as the image suggests, kind of like books on digital. You know, and people have even used the language of books, talking about publishing them, you know, having libraries of open education resources, etc. Lots of problems with this. These problems drive up the cost and make it difficult for us to use open learning resources in a scalable way. They become out of date. The technology becomes obsolete. Remember Flash, everyone. Finding them is a problem. Localizing them is a problem. Making sure they're accessible is a problem. There's the cost, the production overhead, and then probably the biggest issue, the general failure to adapt and reuse the learning materials at all, which has been well documented. So these are well-known issues. I'm not going to discuss them at any length, but I'm proposing and talking about kind of a different way of thinking about open learning resources today, which is the dynamic open learning resources. Let me go to the Fly Brain Simulator. Maybe you saw this present or this paper that was published just this week on Nature this week, maybe late last week. People at Princeton and others built a computational model of the fly visual system. It's the theme of this slideshow. You see the image of it in the upper left. Consistent with available connectome data. The connectome is the list of all the neurons and all the connections in a brain, in this case a fruit fly brain, and has what they call biophysically plausible neurodynamics, etc., etc. The details don't matter. Well, I mean, the details matter a lot, but not for this presentation. It's an incredible piece of work. I'm just blown away by it. I love this piece of work. Now, as part of this project, what they built was something called the Flywire Connectome Data Explorer. And here it is. You can go into it, have a look inside the connectome, and here's all the people who were involved in it. The brain, oops, female adult. brain and nerve cord, etc. Right. And it's like this online simulator. Oh, here we go. This I clicked on the wrong link. Here we go. This is the online simulator. All right, you can go into it. You can see stats about it. You can see some annotations. I like, I like the network graphs because, I'm kind of a network person. I've always been a network person, so this stuff just, makes me happy. So, all right. So we see that. It's a huge advance. And what I really love about this project is that it wasn't just some scientist guy working in a lab. Wasn't even just a bunch of professors working in labs connected across the country. In fact, it was, I think it was like something like 120, 125 different partners in the collaboration. But they were also supported with artificial intelligence, and they were also supported with something like 50,000 gamers who went into the visualization that you just saw and worked with the data, validated the connections, validated the predictions, etc. Did a whole bunch of stuff with this that actually made this project possible. And you can read all about it. Here's the article from Princeton. It's very pro-Princeton, but it's a good article. So here's the iWire game. This is a project from 10 years ago that inspired Flywire, iWire, Fly, you get the idea. And a lot of this happened before AI really came into the picture. And again, though, they did the same sort of thing. They mapped neurons in a mouse retina. They painstakingly assembled millions of tiny little puzzles to solve the 3D structure for each mouse neuron. Fabulous. It's just incredible. I wish I had been part of that. I can only imagine what it was like to do that. I can only imagine what it feels like today, having been a part of that, been a part of Flywire, played this game, helped develop this connectome, and been part of this release. I'd feel like, especially if I was a student, I'd feel like my life work is complete and I haven't even graduated yet. And that leads us to the idea of dynamic open learning, right? Dynamic open learning to be contrasted with static open learning, which is what we saw in the first slide with the open education resources stacked up like books, etc. Dynamic open learning is like what they did with the fly. I'm just realizing that my wife yesterday watched the movie The Fly. That's kind of an interesting image. And so accidentally I watched part of the movie The Fly, and I don't watch movies like The Fly. Anyhow, totally off topic. So this is from a quote from a page from the University of Victoria. Dynamic learning is fueled by research-inspired insights and hands-on experience. The interplay of ideas and action gives our students a powerful edge of expertise. To be proven, right? I mean, the research needs to be done. Interestingly, when I looked up dynamic open learning, because it's the topic of this presentation, I found almost nothing online looking for this phrase. I won't take credit for it because clearly it did exist before this presentation, but this does seem to me like an open area of investigation. So, did I skip a slide? Nope. Okay. Part of dynamic open learning and part of what makes it challenging and what makes it interesting is that it's based in community connections. And this is from, believe it or not, Calgary Economic Development. Like I said, I did a search for this, and this is one of the things that turned up. But they get the idea. A dynamic open learning system will require active involvement from key members of the learning system, namely learners, educators, and employers. And I would add, pretty much everybody else in the community. You look at the FLY project. We're looking at scientists. We're looking at computer technicians. We're looking at biologists, neurophysicists, etc. A huge collaboration across a wide community. And this would be the case for pretty much any kind of dynamic open learning that you would do. What are the characteristics of dynamic open learning? And here, just want to give credit because it's kind of fun to do that. This is Cindy Underhill from OpenEd 2012. Can you believe it? Diagramming something from Alan Levine, and it turned up in my search for dynamic open learning. So basically, having looked at different discussions of dynamic open learning, here are the characteristics. One, uses real data. That's really important. Yeah, you could fake the data, but now you've got a case of static open learning. The best dynamic open learning, to my mind, uses real data. Transparent processes, so you can see the data coming in, you can see what we're doing with the data, we can see whatever manipulations we're doing, we can see how we're making decisions in the project, etc. Collaborative and cooperative. Most people just say collaborative, but I think we need to be clear that both collaboration and cooperation are required. Collaboration is where everyone's working toward the same goal. Cooperation is where people are working toward different goals, but they find exchanges of mutual value. It's interactive, it's constructive, it's more than just playing a game. You're actually doing something with purpose to create something, and it addresses real world problems. Now, this is hard. It's really hard, and that's probably why we haven't seen very much in the way of open dynamic learning. It's really hard because it's hard to set up the data, it's hard to set up the interaction with the community, it's hard to do the conversation, the coming to conclusions, etc. I found a project called the EduCalibra Condor Project, working toward community-driven development of educational material. And it captured a lot of the issues involved with creating dynamic open learning. For example, transactive memory. You've got this community going, and it's been going for a year or so, and then somebody new joins the community. Well, they've missed the year or so of stuff that happened before they joined. How do you deal with that? That's an example of the sort of thing. Shared models. Now, in this article, they're actually talking about shared mental models. I wanted to take that away from mental models and just make that shared models in the community. For example, ontologies that you can work with. Dynamic network formation. You can't have 50,000 people, for example, all working together in a single environment. That's craziness. So you need to be able to subdivide that, build smaller groups, focus on specific projects. All of that needs to be done. Hard to do. People who are organizing this conference can attest to that. It's hard to get all of that set up. And then how do you make decisions? Again, hard to do. So there are a lot of roles for artificial intelligence in the creation of dynamic open learning. Now, I know. Everybody's got criticisms of artificial intelligence these days. And I can imagine the other presentations going on at this conference. And we'll talk a bit about that at the end. But, and I also want to say, it's not just generative AI. We're not just talking about some AI that's going to create some content for us. But that is one of the roles. Data collection and interpretation is a role. Transaction logging and summarization. I had, as I was talking, I had somebody request, the little thing pops up on the screen, that I turn on the AI tools, right? We're working in an AI supported environment as we work here in this Zoom environment. It'll summarize the content, it'll highlight key points, or maybe it'll translate text, etc. Dynamic network formation, another role for AI, as I mentioned, and consensus identification. So, all of that seems airy-fairy, right? Maybe someday in the future we can do this. Well, part of my argument today is we can do this now. We can make all of these things happen now. These tools exist. I'm not going to go into every one of these tools because I just don't have anything like enough time to do that. But here's one type, one set of tools: data collection and interpretation. This is a well-established set of tools that exist, have existed for a while. Automatic image analysis is one that I've been playing with recently. Let's see if I can just pop into the right place. This link might not work for you if you're trying it yourself, because it goes into my own account. So sorry about that, but you'll be able to at least see this on the screen. So I went into the Google AI school, AI Studio, some in Pokeball obsession. That's stupid. I mean, I'm not saying Pokeballs are stupid, but it's a pretty trivial example, right? So I took one of my actual photos that I was in Morocco, in Rabat, for a conference recently. So I took an actual photo. I asked it to write a short, engaging blog post based on this picture. It did that. I wanted more like a caption. It did that, but I didn't like it. I wanted more detail and less flowery language. So I tried to, if possible, providing some scientific, geographic, or historical background. Tried for that. Now, it had some issues. It called the five-sided Moroccan star the Star of David. So, not really right. And the sort of thing that could cause, well, an international incident if I published it. So, still not quite ready for prime time. Try something a little more neutral. Here are some flowers. We're back to Rabat. Here's a picture of a guard that I photographed. It's describing it. I really wanted to tell me about it. Here's the Star of David reference that I mentioned. Now, what's really interesting is that this is real time. So I'll take my prompt. So here's my prompt. Now I've been, you notice my prompt got a bit more and a bit more descriptive, specific. So there's my prompt. Write a short, detailed, and informative caption. I'm going to add an image to this. So I'll actually upload it from my computer. Let's see. Oh, there, that's a good subject. All right, so here's the image. I actually just tried this. I didn't pre-select this image because I'm living dangerously. All right, there it is. So we can all recognize what it is. Let's see what Google thinks. Now, the important thing here is that it has published, okay, we're up to, okay, 6.8 seconds. I wanted it now, but it took 6.8 seconds. Okay. An abandoned wasp nest made of papery material hangs from a branch of a tree, likely in a temperate climate. Dead on so far. It's composed of layers of chewed wood fibers, which the wasp used to build the nest. The nest is now empty. Nice deduction. And the wasps have likely flown away for the winter because there are no leaves on the tree. The nest may be inhabited by other insects or small animals. Dead on. And no international incidents. That's the sort of thing. Now, that's a small thing, right? it's not a big thing, but as part of a big project, having that capacity at your fingertips is great. You simple examples, and as part of your project, people go out and do a survey of the ecology in their neighborhood. I did that when I was in high school. We went out behind this high school, went down to the creek, collected samples, water samples, plant samples, did a report, etc. Now they can do this and they can actually find out what they were talking about, or what they were looking at, rather, I should say. Whoops. Oh, dang, that's not what I intended to do. This is what I intended to do. Share, host tools. Back to my presentation. There we go. Dynamic content creation. These links do work. There are some things that I did over the last little while. Perplexity is an AI. I did a research, a bit of a research study on connectivism. Basically, I asked it to give me resources on connectivism. These are the results here. Automated summarizing of podcasts. Now, many of you will have seen this, but for those of you who haven't, I really do have to show you. So, I got this from Darcy Norman, and he had Notebook LM summarize his dissertation. So I tried to do the same thing with a paper that I wrote on connectivism a while back.
Ever run into someone you haven't thought about in ages, and suddenly your brain's like, whoa, memories with this random person, you know?
Yeah, like that time.
It's like you're.
Now, I'm not sure, were you able to hear that? Somebody give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Ah, that's too bad. There's probably a way to make that work, but I don't know what it is.
Share sound.
Okay, where's share sound?
When you go to the screen share in the lower left-hand corner, there's a share computer sound button that you have to click, or a box you have to check.
All right, let's go into share. La-dee-da-dee-da. I'm so stupid sometimes. Not seeing it. Oh, there it is. Not in the lower left-hand side. All right.
Like you're both wearing those ridiculous hats from
Good
that
now?
music festival 5 years ago, and you just know your brain's doing some seriously impressive,
And
like
see
behind the
Peter
scenes stuff.
Finch laughing
It
at it
is wild
because.
when you think about it. I mean, what we think of as just recognizing someone, like a simple thing, it's actually billions of neurons going off in this crazy interconnected dance.
That's what we're diving into today, right?
Yeah.
Connectivism.
Yeah.
Forget.
All right. It goes on like that for almost 12 minutes. Now, as the person who wrote the paper, I can say a couple things. First of all, the summary was accurate. Second, the summary actually used some examples, good examples, that I hadn't actually used in the paper. So I was pretty impressed with the result. Now, a lot of people are calling this, quite rightly, a parlor game, because all of these podcasts sound the same. So they're obviously using the same voices, a lot of the same speech generation algorithms, interpretive algorithms, etc., to generate this. It is a parlor game. Another thing is that they've been getting worse as they've been getting more popular. If I try to do the same connectivism one now, it might not be nearly as good. I did see reports where people did try it on the same material over time, and it got worse and worse and worse. So it's not 100% great, reliable technology yet, but yeah, who cares, right? For the point that we're making, who cares? It's the sort of thing that you could use, especially once it gets good and there's more variety and more speaking tones, etc., to summarize reports, meeting data. Remember, we just looked at data in a fairly intuitive way. Automated course creation. Now, We're talking dynamic learning resources. I understand that. But part of the whole concept here is, or what I want to say is that because we don't need to create static resources anymore, because we can create static resources on the fly as we need them. And so this was a simple little experiment I did. I prompted ChatGPT to please write me a 100-page textbook on logic. That was my prompt. So much for prompt engineering. And this is what it produced for me. Now, I could go through each of these topics and say, you know, please write me a chapter on such and such. And here's a sample chapter it gave me on propositional logic. Now, this is stuff I taught. I used to teach this in university, dead on accurate. If I spent the whole day, I could produce my 100-page logic textbook, no problem. So why would it be necessary for me to create a 100-page logic textbook, wrap it up as an OER, package it, put it in a library, etc., whatever, when I can create my own logic textbook, localize it for my own needs, put it in the language I want, tailor the examples, give me a little podcast of each section, as we've just seen, and do that in a day. And that's now. I could do that in a day now, right? Probably I could do, give it a bit of time, I can do it in 5-10 minutes in the future. So, dynamic content creation. Translation, logging, and summarization. We don't have an auto-translator going at the moment, although I have seen them, and in theory we could. I do know that translations are good enough now that we can get a pretty good translation of, say, this talk in real time. On my screen, and therefore probably on yours, I actually see the text as I'm saying it being printed on the screen. So transcription is being generated. I'm also, you can't see that. This is the reason I bought this phone, which you should be seeing on your screen now, because it's recording this talk and generating a real-time transcription. This is how I've been generating transcriptions of my talks for the last few years. All the sorts of stuff, and ChatGPT itself is in AI mode doing all of these things that I described. And of course, we can use an application like Quillbot or whatever. There's dozens of them out there now. The hard part is finding one that won't rip you off. We can summarize texts, no problem. So remember the problem, somebody coming along a year after our project started, well, they can get caught up pretty quickly, and we don't need to have somebody stop, get all the content together and give them a training session or anything like that. They just use some AI tools and bring themselves up to speed pretty much on their own. So we'd need some scaffolding and support, obviously, but basically pretty much on their own. Dynamic network formation. Again, there's a bunch of stuff about that. Up to and including AI applications that join in a chat with you. People who use Discord or even Reddit know all about AIs jumping into the conversation. Consensus building. You have AI project management. I created a little project on a service called Monday, which is, I don't know, and so here it is. It's silly thing, it forgot where I was. So timeline. Let's use the Kanban layout. A, B, C. And we'll get started. And here's my AI-supported project management space. For those of you who've done project management, you know how much of a pain this is. Here we have AI is basically going to do pretty much everything your project manager who took that whole Project Management Institute course or set of courses had to learn how to do. We have an AI application doing it for us. If you're a project manager, I'm so sorry. Collaborative authoring support, collaborative intelligence, all of these things are supported by AI. So, it's 11:30, so I'm going to stop here, but I just want to point out, I know that there are objections to the AI. Does AI improve access to learning? Well, I made a logic text in a day. How can that not improve access to learning? Right, I could print it out on paper if I wanted, but the main thing is I've created this text. Is AI an environmental nightmare? If you run the numbers, it actually uses less energy than our daily cup of coffee. So you have to have a sense of proportion here when we're talking about AI being an environmental nightmare. Does generative AI misrepresent members of marginalized communities? Yes, it does. And that tells us that we need better data to train our AI than Twitter posts. Obviously. But the only way to do that is to create and share that data. And I've written elsewhere about the need for us to create and share representative data in order to help train AI properly. Does AI steal content? No, it does not. It analyzes content, looks at the order of words, and uses the order of words in order to predict what the best answer is to a question or prompt. When you create a piece of content, your original expression is protected, absolutely, and you have copyright over that. But you do not have copyright over basic elements of the language. You do not have copyright over the words that you use. And so there's a very good argument, and I would make that argument, AI is not stealing content, not any more than a person who reads a book and learns from the book. And does it violate the spirit of open access? Well, look, if it's all run by large corporations for the pure pursuit of profit, creating barriers and making it more difficult for us to communicate with ourselves, then yeah, it violates the spirit of open access. And the stuff that companies like OpenAI have done, especially recently, violate the spirit of open access. But the response of the community can't be, no, 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 AI is bad. AI is nothing but mathematics, right? And language, but mostly mathematics. And we, you know, mathematics isn't something that inherently violates the spirit of open access. We have the opportunity in the open learning community to use AI in the way I've described here and make great leaps forward in open access. It's an incredibly powerful tool. If we leave it to only the commercial enterprises, then we'll all pay the price for that. 11:33, that's my time. We have 7 minutes for questions. Something like a record for me, so I'll take those questions now. Oh, and look at the chat. It's just filled with questions.
You all are welcome to, using the chat is fine, but you all are welcome to come off mute and ask your questions if that's fine.
Fine with me.
Yeah, I see. Is that Sonia has yep. a hand raised? You're welcome to come off mute.
Yeah, hi. I asked this last year with another person who talked about generative AI, and I love hearing different people's perspectives on it. As a young person, I have a lot of friends who love AI, hate AI, everything in between. It's quite fun to have conversations with all of them. But I wanted to see what your perspective is when somebody says, oh, AI is bad. Like, how do you talk to them about it?
I talk to them about it by talking about how I use AI and how AI gives me capacities that I didn't have before. I'm writing a little application, and here it is. All right. And this code, I'm writing this code. The AI isn't writing this code, but the AI is teaching me how to write this code. Oh, I went to share it and nobody saw it. Silly me. Here's my application that I'm writing. It's in JavaScript. I'm not really good at JavaScript, and it's a mess of a language to work with. I'm writing the application. I'm designing it. The AI is helping me. Its suggestions are often wrong, but its suggestions are right enough that I can look at it and figure out the right way to do it. So AI helps me a lot. If they still believe AI is bad, then that's their belief and I'm fine with it. But now I have a tool that they don't. And that's all I can say about it.
There's a question in the Q&A from Mark. Says, are there accuracy problems or issues in the is that generative AI textbook chapter?
In the one that I just produced, no. It was dead on accurate. And the reason for that is there's a lot of material in the data that the AI sampled that would be saying exactly the same thing. You know, it's not that there are many ways of doing propositional logic. It's propositional logic, basically one way of doing it. And so that chapter was accurate. But in general, right now, generative AI produces a lot of factual errors. And the reason for that is that it is not an encyclopedia tool. It is a language interface. So it speaks language really well. As many people have pointed out, it has no idea what it's talking about. It has no base of knowledge. You can pre-program it with some content using a process called retrieval augmented generation, or RAG, where you give it a body of text and say, use this body of text when you're generating your answers. And this can be very large bodies of text. And then it will be accurate to that text. Go beyond that and it won't be accurate. So, yeah, there are issues with accuracy because of the way the tool is designed. It's not a problem with AI. It's just people expecting the tool to do something it wasn't designed to do.
Other questions?
Beverly Gibson says to everyone, we are nothing more than the sum of the information we've consumed. Great comment. I love that. Except I would say we are nothing more than the sum of the experiences that we've had. There's a difference between information and experiences. And the experiences are the raw data. Information is an interpretation of that raw data. But I still really like I like the sentiment. How are you acknowledging the use of tools in what you're creating? Everything I've created with AI, I've written a post and said, look what I created with AI, basically. That's it, right? You say, this was created with the assistance of, or I used AI. Here's the prompt that I used. I've always posted the prompt. For the software that I'm developing, I've got a complete log of all of the interactions that I've had with ChatGPT, and unless something breaks dramatically, my intention is to make that chat log available as well. But I want to be careful. Harper Friedman asks, do you think the term AI gives a false understanding of what AI actually is? Yes and no. I want to be careful here because there are some subtleties. So the first simple answer is, okay, we do not yet have artificial intelligence. I think everybody understands that, right? Like I said earlier, it's all mathematics. And the sum of intelligence isn't encompassed by mathematics. I think there may be some other stuff going on. Who knows, right? More to the point, though, when the term AI was first coined in the 50s or whenever, we were nowhere close to having artificial intelligence, right? The term AI represents an aspiration, not an accomplishment. We would like to use our tools to get to artificial intelligence. So it's sort of like, the space program, right? The space program was called that even before they ever shot their first rocket, right? The moon mission was called that before Neil Armstrong ever set foot on the moon. And nobody had a problem with that. Nobody said, well, you can't call it the moon mission because nobody's ever actually stepped on the moon. Well, no, but we intended to, and we did. So that's basically my answer to that. But also I want to say, intelligence is one of those concepts that's really tricky. And the same sort of processes are used by the computer as are used by human brains, as massively demonstrated by the fruit fly connectome. So it's not just aspirational. It's also saying we're trying to do it in kind of the same way human intelligence works as well. So that's 11:40. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, thank you so much for this great session. We thank you all for your participation and your engagement. Stephen, do you want to stay on? I can transfer host, and for those that have more questions and want to chat with you, there is time between now and the next session. So you all are free and welcome to do that. If you want to, I can switch that over and you all can hang out and continue to chat and ask questions for a few minutes. But if not, you all continue to enjoy the conference, and I will likely see you around.
Yeah, I'm going to log off because I want to see the next session too.
Well, thank you all. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye.